TalkZone.com.
Now, TalkZone presents the Cyber Advisor. This is the show that looks at the people and events that move the financial markets and shape our economy. Here's your host for the Cyber Advisor, David Revelle.
Well, it's been about 61 years since we've seen anything like this. A major European country, Greece, stands on the verge of default on their own sovereign debt. Simply put, they soon may not be able to pay the interest on their government bonds. As William Butler from the London School of Economics and soon to be the chief economist for Citicorp puts it, it's 5 minutes to midnight in Greece. And what's more, Greece is not alone. Well, how did we get there? And most importantly, what are the ramifications for us here in the United States? We'll explore it all on today's edition of the Cyber Advisor. Hi, everybody. I'm Dave Revelle, and I'm your host for this, the December 11th edition of the Cyber Advisor. This is where we celebrate the entrepreneurs and investors who make this economy and country work. If you'd like to join us on the show, our lines are open. You can dial toll-free 888-463-6748. That's 888-GO-FOR-IT. Or reach me on my email. It's Dave at the Cyber Advisor. Well, Monday this week began kind of a drumbeat over in Europe as Portugal was put under pressure to trim their government's deficit. If there's one thing Portugal's government has to do, it's to show it will take steps to trim the bloated budget deficit, said Standard & Poor's. The country's finance minister delivered this message today during a visit to Standard & Poor's. When Standard & Poor's placed Portugal on a negative outlook. Fernando de Santos made it plain that the center-left government will take careful yet deliberate steps to tramp down the deficit. It will have a high-profile opportunity to signal those intentions in late January when the prime minister presents his budget proposals to the Portuguese parliament. As of this moment, Portugal's deficit is on track to exceed 8% this year, with public debt hitting 75% of gross domestic product. The prime minister contends that this is about average for Europe on a size-weighted basis, but even so, it's not pretty and stands in contrast with Portugal's pre-crisis federal deficit of just 2.6%. Now, let me give you up front the numbers to keep in the back of your mind, and we'll remind you as this goes along that a deficit of about 3% is all the rating agencies like to see, and a total debt, the total government debt for any country should not exceed 100% of gross domestic product. In other words, your total government bonds should not exceed 1 year's gross domestic product. Well, that's how the world started out, but it was kind of a two-way system as the United States was focused on one thing and Europe and the rest of the world was focused on first Portugal and then, as we'll see later, Spain, Greece, and others as they kind of continued what was happening last week, as you'll recall, in Dubai when Dubai threatened to postpone some interest payments on their government subsidies bonds. Well, Monday started out as close to absolute flat as it's possible to get, with the Dow Industrial Average up only about a point, the NASDAQ was down 4 points, and the Standard & Poor's 500 was up a little less than 3 points. One of the things that's been most interesting for all of us market watchers as we've kind of gone through this is to see that dollar stock market, U.S. stock market relationship. Whenever the dollar was strong, the market would be weak and vice versa. Lately, the dollar has been weak and the market has rallied as a result of that. Much of this we attribute to the carry trade, the ability for some large hedge funds and other players to borrow in U.S. dollars at low interest rates and invest in other financial assets such as the market. Well, the Wall Street Journal noted on Monday that the U.S. dollar index was rallying again today, and it's now poised to close above its 50-day moving average for a second straight day. A 50-day moving average is a call that investors and traders particularly look at to see whether or not an entity, a financial entity, is in a rally mode with the dollar index above its 50-day moving average clearly indicated strength coming into the dollar. The question then becomes, would we see some weakness in the stock markets? And indeed, on Tuesday, that strength in the dollar was reflected in a very weak U.S. market with the Dow Industrial Average down over 100 points, 104 points, 1% to 10,285. NASDAQ was down 16 points, about 0.75% to 2172. And the Standard & Poor's 500 down 11.31 points, 1% to 1,091, below again that that 1,100 mark on the Dow. One of the most interesting things that is happening this week from a U.S. perspective was related to TARP. On Tuesday, we were beginning to get an indication that Citibank was anxious to get out from under their TARP loan. It would entail them raising $20 billion in a new stock offering, but it would enable them to get out from under TARP. And so the question naturally became, would there be an instance where we might have to use TARP again? Robert Bench, who is a former bank examiner and now on Harvard's faculty, was asked that very question, whether he thought that we would need to use TARP again, and what TARP signaled for him. Here's Robert Bench's answer.
I think so. A year ago we crossed the line in public policy. The financial system became a government-sponsored enterprise that brought Main Street into Wall Street. And once Main Street got into Wall Street, they couldn't understand the gap in compensation that was going on at Wall Street. And for a year at least, there's been demand from Main Street that compensation on Wall Street become a scheme that is in the interest of Main Street as well as Wall Street.
Well, the financial system became a government-sponsored enterprise. What a fabulous way to put it. And I think the end result of all this is neither Wall Street nor Main Street is very happy with how things have worked out. Certainly Citibank is not happy. And you recall last week Bank of America tried to get out or is in the process of working their way out of their TARP agreement. Much of this has hinged on executive compensation. If you are a member of TARP, if you have taken TARP funds, you will be subject to the financial czar, who will determine what your compensation can be for upper management. Wall Street is very unhappy of that, and there's a big move by Wall Street to get out from under that. Equally unhappy, however, is Main Street with when they look kind of behind the scenes and behind the curtains to see how Wall Street is working and how much they are compensated and so on. Main Street is not at all happy about that. And so both sides have been very uncomfortable with TARP. But Robert Bench was then asked, well, basically, did it work or did it not work? And here's what Robert Bench says.
Absolutely. I think the TARP did a great job in terms of stabilizing the financial meltdown that was occurring a year ago. And the financial system has stabilized at the global international level of at large institutions. However, the financial crisis drifted into the real economy, and now we have a deleveraging of credit globally that is causing other pockets of instability, and the TARP funds are absolutely needed and reserved to deal with that instability.
I think it's really critical to make the distinction between TARP and the stimulus. Robert Bench is exactly right. TARP did work. As you may recall, during the crisis, we had one money market fund, the Reserve Fund, break a buck as tremendous volume of redemptions came into that money market fund, and it caused them to break a buck. The entire financial system was really on a precipice, as has been said many times, and TARP worked specifically for the financial institutions in the country. That's distinct from a way to help Main Street work out of the recession, and that has been more the task of the stimulus package itself. I think the stimulus package, it's fair to say by any measure, has been less than successful at this point and really is kind of questionable about how it's working. But one other aspect of TARP came forward this week when the Congressional Oversight Panel issued a report on Wednesday. Now, the chairman of the Congressional Oversight Panel is Elizabeth Warren, and they were looking at the major banks that were under that stress test. You may recall that TARP put all the major financial institutions under, and the headline of their report is that most of the financial institutions are in better shape today than they were with TARP. There are, however, some notable exceptions that I want to draw to your attention, and I think any investor who going forward here should pay particular attention to this report on TARP. You can find it on the bankwatchers.com and so on. But in there, there's four significant financial organizations who have lower capital today than they did when with TARP a year ago. The first one's Capital One Financial, then MetLife, the large insurance company, State Street Corporation. You may not be terribly familiar with them, but they are either the first or second largest custodian in the country, holding a lot of retirement assets and a lot of mutual fund assets. And finally, Wells Fargo and Company, which has done virtually everything they could to avoid taking TARP funds, and that may indeed be reflected in those numbers. But anyway, four institutions of the 12 or so largest would show actual declines in their net capital. Elizabeth Warren was asked to, who is the chairman of the Congressional Oversight Committee of TARP, was asked her evaluation of TARP, and she does a very good job of explaining the implicit guarantee that TARP provided for these and the difficulty, the moral hazard, if you will, of getting out of that. And here's Elizabeth Warren.
Well, you know, let's keep in mind that when these banks repay their money to TARP, they get to escape the very small controls that were there on executive compensation. But they don't give up the implicit guarantee that has been created by TARP. Investors take a sharp look at what's gone on and they say, look, you rushed the American taxpayers in and said, we're going to put billions of dollars into these institutions if they start to fail. It's like holding up a big sign. These institutions are too big. We will put any amount of money in to save them. And so investors are saying quite openly that, hey, it doesn't really matter. They pay the government back, but if they get into trouble again, taxpayers will be called on to bail them out. I think this is the single biggest cost coming out of TARP. This implicit guarantee for the big boys, not there for the small guys, and certainly not there for the American family.
So we've talked a lot about, and Citibank this week, Bank of America last week has talked a lot about working our way out of TARP and an exit strategy for TARP. But Elizabeth Warren here is exactly correct. The implicit guarantee, the too big to fail, is something that will stay with us for a very, very long time. It was something entered into at probably the spur of the moment, offhandedly, but it is now something that stays with us. And as Elizabeth Warren points out, it, in the end, may be the most costly aspect of TARP going forward. Well, on Wednesday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the rest of the market rebounded from Tuesday's fall, with the Dow climbing 51 points, NASDAQ was up 10 points, and the Standard & Poor's 500 was up 4 points, putting it at 1095, just below that 1100 mark. Also on Wednesday, we had a 10-year bond auction for the U.S. Treasury, and one of the most interesting things to watch was that the rate on the 10-year note jumped from 340 to 345 yield, as the demand for U.S. debt was a little weaker than all the market watchers on Wall Street had expected. And the reason for this is because of the tremendous amount of debt that the U.S. government is now committed to bringing forward on the market. Well, on Wednesday also, the really big news was that Fitch, which is one of the three top rating agencies in the country, has downgraded Greece's sovereign debt, their U.S. Or rather their their treasury bonds to a BBB+ with a negative outlook. Now, BBB+ is getting into the barely investment quality grade, and a negative outlook indicates that they think going forward, Greece's financial situation is going to be even worse. So Fitch said its move was due to, quote, concerns over the medium-term outlook for public financing, given the weak credibility of fiscal institutions and the policy framework in Greece. Now, Greece had recently last summer elected a left-leaning government, which has increased spending dramatically, especially on the social side, but there have not been any countervailing increases in the revenue new for the country, and so deficits and Greece have increased dramatically. What does that mean? That means essentially that Greece is a less secure borrower today, according to Fitch, than it was yesterday, and will have to pay up in the form of higher interest rates going forward compared to other entities in Europe. So a really significant story as we go forward. Now, on Thursday, the market continued to climb out of the hole that it had created on Tuesday, with the Dow Industrial Average up about 68 points, put it back up to the 10,400 level, 10,405. NASDAQ was up 7 points, or a third of a percentage point, and the Standard & Poor's 500 continued to gain, up 6 points and right back above the 1,100 mark at 1,102. The big storyline for most of Europe and most of the world continued to be sovereign risk. This chance that some of these governments, like Dubai had done the week before, might either delay their interest payments or not be able to fulfill their interest payment. When speaking of Spain, which also fell under the review of Standard & Poor's this time, Spain was also lowered in its rating, and its outlook remains negative, although Spain is substantially better than Greece, still having a single A rating. But Standard & Poor's had this to say: formerly an engine of Eurozone job creation and economic growth, Spain last year suffered an abrupt reversal of fortune when the global financial crisis precipitated the collapse of the country's formerly buoyant construction industry. So real estate rears its ugly head. Through the wider Eurozone returned to growth in the third quarter, the Spanish economy continued to contract. Spanish officials had said they expect Spain to return to growth in the first quarter, but it did not. In addition, S&P noted Spain's persistently high fiscal deficits relative to peers. Let us give you that benchmark one more time. Anytime the total sovereign debt of a country exceeds its one-year gross domestic product, or anytime the one-year deficit exceeds 3%, then the rating agencies are going to look very much askance, and that is obviously the line in the sand that they have put down this year. Exceed your GDP and total debt, or have more than 3% deficits in a year, and your debt is going to be subject to a change in rating. Well, that's the recap for this week's market. It's time for a short break. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more right after this.